So, Jeff, how was your weekend?
Pretty good. Got some grilling on yesterday.
Nothing eventful? Nothing eventful?
Played some board games, had some people over.
Okay, well, I'm envious of your day and your night. What would you like to know specifically why I'm envious of both of those times?
Why are you envious of both? Of my weekend.
Okay, so Saturday, me and Tiffany decided that we were going to take a parents' day, and we left Raleigh with my parents, and we went up to Lake Lure, which is near our house, and got to eat a great dinner in front of a nice beach, which would be the lake. I don't know why they call it a beach if it's a lake, but that's beside the point. Ate some great food at this restaurant, and we came home to an interesting package on our door. Now, at this point in the narrative, I should probably reveal. No, it was not. It was. I know it wasn't you, and for good reason. this is where the story gets interesting. All right, so I have a friend that I've known probably my entire life that likes to travel internationally a lot. And when he goes out, sometimes he'll come back and he'll bring me things. Like when he went to Cuba, he brought me some cigars when he came back. You know, very cool, very cool.
Did someone ship Sonya to us?
No, it's not Sonya. It's not somebody shipping Sonya. When he went to Canada, he brought me back some kind of crazy looking maple syrup that had a giant moose on it. You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And just every time this guy goes somewhere different, he brings me something and leaves it on my front door. Now, I don't talk to this guy a lot because he's all over the globe all the time. When he went to Japan, he did bring me a lot of pictures of the suicide forest and some panties he got out of a vending machine, which I thought was a great gift. But this was the gift that finally made me realize maybe I need to be in touch with this guy a lot more. So it was this kind of long square box, right? And I realized he had recently been to France. Now think of all the things in France that you think of that are especially French. Think of all of them.
Absinthe?
Yes. So I had not told this guy that I'd been dry, and even every now and then, you know, once every 8 to 6 months in a social situation, I'll have a beer or something like that. Just like the forced social beer. You know what I mean? And I don't even finish it, but we open up this up and there's this dark green bottle in French writing. And it's like we put it on the table and me and Tiffany are sitting there looking at it. And she's like, well, you know, he didn't know you were sober. You'd gone sober. So it was a really nice gift. I was like, yeah, it was. And we're kind of sitting there looking at this bottle. And, you know, I've heard all this shit about absinthe my entire life, how, you know, it made Van Gogh cut his ear off and all this other crazy stuff. And me and Tiffany are a bit of a more open-minded set, I guess is the best way to put that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were sitting there, and I give Tiffany credit. She looked at me, and she goes, well, you know, we need to try it just to say we tried it. And I looked at her and I was like, are you sure? Because like then all the shit I'd heard about absinthe came to the front of my head, right? And she was like, well, we'll both have one glass and then we'll pour it out. And I said, okay. And we wanted to do this just to tell our friend, you know, we appreciated the gift, right? And I didn't know that absinthe, like I completely forgot about this because I had never tried absinthe here stateside. And I've never traveled abroad, you know, so I've never gotten to cultivate it on my formerly refined alcoholic palate. And so I didn't realize absinthe was something you drank like a shot of and you cut it with water and sugar, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You pour like cold ice water over sugar.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I had no idea. So we go and we get like the tumbler glasses that we still had and we put them on the table and I get like an ice cube or two and I'll put it in there and Tiffany gets like an ice cube or two and puts it in there. So we take the cork off and we pour the tumblers full. Okay. And I take a big whiff of it. Now, my big weakness that I've always had my entire life for a sweet tooth is I don't like, you know, like Reese cups or anything like that. I don't like just dark chocolate, though I do like dark chocolate. My sweet tooth is for fucking black licorice. Okay. If you want to con me into doing anything, give me a bag of not like Twizzler black licorice, because that shit tastes like plastic.
Yeah.
Give me a bag of real black licorice, and I'll fucking jump off the Empire State Building if you want me to. Okay? So But I took a big whiff of it and I was just like, oh, this is the devil's liquor, you know? But I took a sip and I was like, oh, this is pretty good. You know, I'm ashamed that we're going to pour the rest of this out, but whatever. So I finished my tumbler off and I felt very proud of myself. And then immediately I started sweating because like, it's like the thing for those of you at home that don't know anything about alcohol consumption, when you decide that you're going to stop drinking, your body immediately starts reverting back to how it was when you were a lightweight. Okay. And if you're one of those people that sweats excessively when you drink like whiskey and stronger liquor and stuff like that, the same thing's going to start back up as soon as you have a drink again. I can't even drink like beer really without like my face getting super, super red just because it's how my body interacts with liquor. Okay. So I finish this and Tiffany kind of like looks at hers, you know, takes a sip and she's like, tell you what, just this once, if you want to finish mine off, you can, but I understand if you say no. And I was like, oh, this stuff tastes like candy. Yeah. So I finish it off. And by that point, you know, absinthe, I think is 50 or 60 proof. And this was like somebody's home, like absinthe that they had specifically made. So there's no telling how strong this stuff was because I couldn't read French. And so we poured this out. And it's, you know, even Jeff, when I was drinking like a gallon of whiskey a day, okay, like no, I'm completely serious. I would go through this stuff like that. Even when I was drinking a gallon of whiskey a day, I never threw up. All right, like ever, ever, ever. I never got to the point where I was so drunk that I would actually throw up. So I'm sitting
sounds like that changed.
Yes. Okay. So I'm sitting in my bed. And I suddenly wake up because I realize my body's doing the daddy's tummy felt funny. Okay. And so I'm like, oh wow, I might have to throw up. And then I sit up and immediately I feel it rising to my lips. So I do this fucking barrel roll over my wife, right? I make it out of our bedroom door and our bathroom is directly across the hall and I make it inside the door of the bathroom and I turn my head and I vomit. Like everything, like my soul, my entire being just upchucks into this toilet. Okay. And I don't remember anything after that. I got up the next, except like flushing and I swished some mouthwash around in my mouth and Tiffany came and checked on me to make sure I was okay. So we wake up the next morning cause we're still kidless and you know, this, this was great. And I look around the bathroom, this vomit. Like most of it got contained in the toilet, but it came out of my body with such velocity and force that it's like splattered on the blinds 8 feet away from the toilet. I have no idea how that happened. It's all over the mirror. It's on the front and back of the door. It's on the shower curtain. It's pretty much everywhere. So, that was my night. My night was hell. It was like living through an advocacy ad all over again. It was terrible. So needless to say.
This is why I don't drink. Oh.
Yeah. Like, and I mean, you know, I cleaned it all up because if nothing else, I'm a responsible person. Most of the time I say after I talk about how I vomited. I cleaned it all up, but yeah, like after that, I realized why I had completely given up drinking. It was fucking crazy. That was the most insane shit I have ever seen in my entire life. So, that was my day.
All right. So last week, 2 foot dragon dicks. This week, projectile vomiting.
I was amazed. I had to tell somebody and I figured you and our listeners are the next best bet because I just like, how the fuck does vomit come out of your mouth so hard it winds up on the blinds? Like, holy shit.
Yeah. And with to risk going further down this rabbit hole, I mean, I've thrown up so hard it like, went through my nose. That was really unsettling. Oh,
that's yeah. The gift that keeps giving. Because even if you like clear your nose, that smell is in there. And without further ado, folks, yeah. This is not another magic.
I had
podcast.
Like bits of spinach in my fucking sinuses. It was awful.
Oh, dude, and it, you know what the thing I was most upset about was I didn't even get to keep on the weight that rich food put on me that we had ate. You know, like come on, come on. Oh, it was shrimp linguine with scallops. Oh, it was so good. But anyways, folks,
speaking
this is not
food. Speaking of food, I've been scouting restaurants for the GP Charlotte trip.
Oh, okay.
Fuck the regular introductions. Let's just talk.
fuck, yeah, fuck it. Guys,
whatever, you know, if you don't know who we are, you probably don't want to know.
You probably don't want to hang out with people that, like, if there was a zombie apocalypse, they would be that zombie that could, like, throw the virus up to you 12 feet away. Like, just saying. But,
back in City of Heroes, the superhero MMO, there was a whole slew of enemies that would, like, spew vomit at you in these, like, incredible arcs.
Oh, yeah, and fantastic. Yeah, and, like, the only thing I could think of the next morning after all this happened was I played a Zombie U on the Wii U, and, of course, they have the zombies that spit up on you, and I'll be fucked if I didn't feel exactly like that the next morning, just because, I was ashamed, but I was more amazed at how it got on seemingly every surface in the bathroom. Like, and it wasn't just, like, you know, a drop here, a drop there, like some blood splatter shit. It was, like actual chunks, like dried stuff. Anyways, oh my god. Okay, so
it is possible the shrimp had something to do with it, though.
I mean, yeah.
Though that probably would have made your wife sick too. So.
Yeah, but yeah. So folks, we have been vigilantly bracing. Oh, before we go any farther after that introduction, I do want to say a happy Memorial Day weekend to everybody who's tuning in. We are actually recording this on Memorial Day. Yep. And though I don't get very political on podcasts often, I do hope you took a moment to remember the folks in our armed forces today. I come from a family with a very strong military background. And let me tell you, it is a thankless, shitty job. So hug a vet, talk to your grandpa, do something like that, and just thank them for what they've done today. That said, yeah, so we have been getting ready for Grand Prix Charlotte. Jeff, you've been scouting out some places to eat. Throw them at me.
Yeah, one that's, like, absolute must go to is this place I found that's called the Cowfish, and it's a sushi and burger bar.
Ooh.
You can get sushi and burgers in the same place, which
I like both the things.
So delightfully Southern American, yeah. You can... Like, I was on the website, and there were pictures of, like, a bento box with a slider in one of the compartments. I'm like, we're going there. Sold.
Oh, dude, I know someplace we need to go if there's actually one near Charlotte, and I haven't thought about it. Do you guys have the cookout up there?
No.
Oh, my God, Jeff. Okay, if there's a cookout nearby in Charlotte, we will have to fucking drive out if we got to, but I have to take you to one. The Cookout is kind of like this chain of Southern restaurants that I think you can really only find in North Carolina.
Hmm.
But it's super, super dirt cheap. You're talking, you can get a burger, a thing of fries, a milkshake. And yes, they have chicken wraps as a side item, for free, for like $5 or $8. And you want to talk about, like, all American bullshit right there? Oh my God. There's nothing more American than the Cookout. And, like, their milkshakes, they have, a list of 80 milkshakes. Like, this place puts Zaxby's to fucking shame. Okay? And it, like, let's say you order a blueberry cheesecake milkshake. They will take an actual piece of blueberry cheesecake and put it in the blender with the milk and the ice cream. I'm not joking. So if there's one nearby, we have to go to that. That place definitely sounds fucking good. I'm trying to think if there's anywhere else in Charlotte.
Yeah, I'd like to go to a Steak and Shake just because, like, I've been to those in the Midwest, and it's Steak and Shake's solid. Like,
yeah, I mean, you can't
basic
fuck
fat,
up a
burger. Like, there's probably equivalents around here, but they're just not the same.
Yeah, and you can't fuck up a burger, so I definitely have to see if there's a cookout nearby for you. Yeah. I figure we're all going to meet up at the greasy pizza place across the street from the convention center for the Brodiel's dinner, maybe? I don't know. Possibly, could be.
Yeah, I scouted a barbecue place that was well-rated. Scouted a place to get, like, the best country fried steak, which I just have this weird, guilty pleasure of country fried steak.
Nothing wrong with that.
If I'm in the South, that's where I should fucking get it.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and tell you right now that the best barbecue you're ever going to find in the South, it's not going to be in a restaurant. Go for the cheesiest, like, homemade sign church barbecues you can find. Oh, my God. All the food's made by grandmothers. You will die. But, yeah.
Is that going to be the mission on Sunday to find, like, church barbecue?
Oh, hell. Yeah, that's what we need to do. Is Sunday, we need to find the cookout or the church barbecue. Let's see here. There's plenty of places to eat in Charlotte. It's... I think the main thing I'm going to worry about when we get there is actually transportation, to be completely honest with you, because, like, we're driving, and we can all pile up in a car. I don't know how ginormous you are, but I'm sure you can fit in our cheesy-ass Saturn we'll be driving. Uh-huh. And me and Tiff will eat anywhere, so I'm down for any kind of adventurous thing you want to do.
Yeah, there's, like, 2 Brazilian steakhouses within 3 blocks of the convention center. And I'm probably... Yeah, those... they're amazing, but they're expensive, and they're probably going to be packed with people from the fucking Magic tournament.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Because Magic nerds, of course, when they congregate together, they have to eat beef and drink.
Yeah.
Apparently, Renee, which, by the way, I want to go ahead and give a preemptive shout-out to Trevor and Renee. We had a very productive business meeting this Sunday about stuff going on with Bro Deals. And there's going to be more details about that to our content producers at the GP. So... Renee is probably going to have some more details over the next coming weeks about where we're going to meet up and eat. I highly encourage you to go to the Bro Deals dinner, and just prepare yourself, I guess is the best way to say that. But preemptive shout out to Trevor and Renee. They are, they're the people that I have talked about along with you that convinced my wife to come meet the Magic Nerds. Cause I talk about you guys so much and how much I love you guys and the Brodeal staff that Tiffany actually got excited about coming to the Grand Prix. Like, she's looking forward to meeting everybody. So big, big shout out to Trevor and Renee. I love you guys to death. You do so much work for us, but, yeah, I'm trying to think of anything else that we might want to do while we're there. I'm pretty sure there's actually, like, if we get bored one night, there's a art house, film theater up there that shows Miyazaki films and stuff like that. So we can go do that. There's various, clubs and I'm sure we could go find Leather and Lace if we really wanted to. I wonder if it's still attached to the ice cream parlor now that I'm thinking about it.
Show up and be like, got any dragon dicks?
Oh my God. We might actually do this. Oh, that would be funny as hell. Oh, no, okay, I have another story I gotta share since we're talking about Charlotte and strip clubs. Okay. This is not the one I shared on Heavy Meta. Okay, so, somebody I know that I'm intimately familiar with, and I'm not gonna say any names because she'll kill me if she hears me talking as she walks in the door here in a minute. somebody that I know used to, has done, like, food service and stuff their whole life, and for some reason, people pass around $2 bills like fucking crazy in our county. Okay? And like on any given night when she was working the till at her former job, she would get 5 $2 bills. Hmm. Now, I want you to think about how really awkward and rare that possibly is. Okay?
Yeah, there's like one place like that in Westbrook. So, you know, my wife works at a bank, so, you know, people will come in changing twos and stuff.
Oh yeah, so you know exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah. So anyways, and what she would do is when the $2 bills came in, she would like buy them from the store, you know, exchange them for 2 ones and take the 2, right? So it got to where this person that I know had like $200 worth of $2 bills. Okay? And we were trying to figure out what to do with these $2 bills. We were like, well, we could go cash them. But, like, at this point, it had surpassed a couple of $2 bills. It was, like, a collection of $2 bills, right? And so they looked at me and were like, let's go to the strip club and confuse the strippers. It was one of those deals where, like, I heard it come out of their mouth. And for, like, despite, like, all the titties and shit I post on Twitter, I don't do strip clubs, okay? A, because my first experience with one was so awkward. And B, like, there's something about seeing naked women up front that I'm not with that just, it's weird for me, okay? Like, it's just super weird. And,
for me, it's not the nudity, it's the like social relationship involved is just,
yes. That's what's awkward. And, like, and dude, like you walk in the club and it's like, you know, you Joe Normal guy and then like every embittered middle-aged dad, you know? Yeah. And it's so fucking awkward to walk into a strip club. But anyways, because of who this person was, I said yes. Okay. And we found a joint that was not too far out of town, surprisingly, because I live in Bible Belt, USA. And So we went to this place, and it was so fucking funny, Jeff, because we came in, and we just, like, we did the thing where, you know, you have the bills in your hand, and you just start slotting them out, right? And so the girls went crazy, and they started, like, coming up and dancing on stage closer to us, and then one of them picked up the $2 bill, and just, like, the puzzled look on her face, like, the other people noticed it, because I guess they thought we were handing them fake money. So here's, like, 10 topless women, all picking up $2 bills and, like, turning them over, you know, looking at them in the light, and just kind of talking amongst each other, being like, are these real? Is this a real $2 bill? Why do they have so many $2 bills? And then kind of very casually tucking them in their waistband and dancing away. Like, it was one of those deals where you had to be there, but it was so hilarious to watch the expressions on their faces that they were getting that many twos at once. So, yeah, that happened.
I mean, that just it must not be a standard thing that all strip clubs do that. Like, a lot of strip clubs I know, you change your money for twos when you get there, pretty much. And, like, it's kind of a way that, like, you don't, as a business thing, you don't spend them really anywhere else, unless you want people to know that you were at the strip club.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But, like, I only know of two places to get $2 bills, and it's strip clubs and Thomas Jefferson's estate in Monticello. Like, those are the places you get twos.
But, oh, God, dude. Yeah, around here, I guess it's just not common or whatever, because, you know, everybody was giving them ones or tens.
To be fair, there should be a strip club at Monticello. I think that would be appropriate to Thomas Jefferson's legacy, but.
There's a joke I could make here, but I'm not going to make it, because that's super offensive. Holy hell. But, yeah, so that was great. As far as other stuff to do in Charlotte, God, I'm trying to think, because it's been so long since I went up there. There's the extremely large homeless population you could talk to. There's that, if you feel like an adventurer. I'm sure there's got to be stuff around the airport and stuff to do. Tiffany said there's apparently a place to eat near the airport, like not very far, so we'll check that out. I'm trying to think of other stuff. I don't know.
There's NASCAR, like, Hall of Fame Museum or some shit, like right next to the convention center. You won't catch me dead inside.
I was about to say, gee howdy, I didn't know you were a racing fan there, Jeff. Like, the most into racing I think I've ever been with Crash Team Racing on the PlayStation 1.
Yeah, racing games. I was just thinking the other day, it's about time that they should, like, in the sort of trend of remastering and re-releasing old games, a re-released version of Need for Speed Porsche Unleashed would be pretty sweet about now.
That would be pretty cool.
Because that game, for its time, was gorgeous, but still had some of those kind of old, slightly older game things going on with it. Like,
not fully realized controls and stuff
The controls were excellent. It was really realistic, almost to a fault. Like, there are points in that game you could actually run out of money because you had to, like, repair your vehicle. Like, the vehicle damage was, like, super realistic and, like, it affected, you know, legitimately affected performance. Like, some of the longer stages, like, the longer races, if you weren't careful, you could just get passed by everyone in the last, you know, quarter just because your car got fucked up along the way.
To think that got surpassed by Italian plumbers with blue shells.
Yeah. So, like, that was really cool, but also they didn't have, like, terrain was either solid or not. So, like, you'd be driving along the countryside in your, you know, Porsche 956 Roadster convertible and just, and then you run into a bale of hay and come to a dead stop. Like, it might as well be a brick fucking wall.
Oh, God. So, and, you know,
I'd love to see that game with, like, modern physics and terrain and stuff where you can actually, like, crash through the hail bay and it, like, slows you down, but it just, like, makes a cloud of fucking hay and straw and stuff.
This actually segues really well into what's our main topic tonight. But before we go any further with this, I do want to say, since we're talking re-releases and remasters, have you seen the Black Mesa remake that's coming out?
I watched the trailer for that, yeah.
I'm extremely curious how that's going to play out. It's still in beta testing currently, I think. I don't think there's been an official release as of yet. But Black Mesa is basically...
Yeah, you can get it in the Steam Early Access thing.
Yeah, Black Mesa, for those of you following along at home, is basically Half-Life 1 done on the Source Engine. Mm-hmm. And again, that's one of those deals where I don't see how it could be anything but a good thing for the title. That's just me. So, anyways, our main topic tonight...
It sounds a little like it's following the Torchlight formula, where Torchlight was basically like some guys got tired of waiting for Diablo 3, so they made Torchlight, which was just a Diablo, which was a very faithful Diablo clone. Torchlight 2 even came out before Diablo 3 came out, so.
And it did gangbusters compared to Diablo post-launch.
Yeah, those games are fantastic.
Yeah, and actually, Torchlight and its sequel, if you want a very early example of that engine, there was a little game called Fate that came out. Lots of people played it because of the Wild Tangent, delivery system. And in all honesty, they weren't bad, despite the fact you had to put it with Wild Tangent. But that kind of brings us to our main topic tonight of, I kind of wanted to talk about dungeon crawlers this evening. And, we're going to talk a little bit about their history and a lot of the earlier games and just what exactly makes them so appealing. For me personally, I got started with dungeon crawlers, and this is going to sound super cheesy and it's going to show how young I am compared to most of our listeners. But, when Diablo came out on the PC, I would sit next to my dad and we'd play it together. And it was kind of this fun little thing that was not like Fallout, which was the apex of gaming during that time period. Mm. And, it was simple enough to where I could watch my dad, I figured out how to play, and then I started grinding. And it was incredibly addictive. And that kind of formula that Diablo established so long ago, actually is more or less pretty much, yeah, it's
yeah, permeates games to this day.
Absolutely. And I mean, it like, for those that don't understand, you really need to go back and actually play Diablo. And even like, as cheesy as it may seem by today's standards, I promise you that game, look at how many others followed it. Just right off the top of my head, you've got, both Torchlights, all the Diablo sequels. There's been dozens of Diablo clones over the years. Like, yeah. Literally so many of them I can't keep up. Inquisitor was one that was a Czech title that comes to mind. Mm-hmm. Oh god, really there's
kinda,
still people.
Any kind of hack and slash RPG does that.
Yeah, but what's funny is even as well known as Diablo is, I think we can even go back further and talk about, like, Gauntlet, on the old mm-hmm. arcade cabinets.
Yeah.
The thing that makes dungeon crawlers so addictive, in my personal opinion, is it's literally a game that you can play with just a mouse, and that's what makes them so good. Mm-hmm.
You do need a keyboard if you're like an archer. You need to hold that shift key to just constantly be firing a hailstorm of arrows. That's critical.
But it's still more or less an archetype of gaming that. It's super addictive because it is so simple, and it's one of those rare games where you can play for, 10 minutes or 10 hours, and you still feel like you actually accomplished something. Mm-hmm. And that, to this day, is why I keep going back to things like Torchlight and Gauntlet, which recently got a remake and re-release, by the way. And Diablo. I mean, there's still Diablo 2 servers out there full of people grinding, fighting, going back and killing the god of, the hell gods all over again. And, it's one of those rare things where you have something that has relatively gone untouched for almost 20 years, which I think is really strange, especially when the rest of gaming, like we were just talking, has changed so much. I mean, you were talking about how much more realistic driving games are now with real physics, wheels sliding on the road if it gets wet or something like that. Yeah. Look at, even stuff like the Grand Theft Auto series, which went from this relatively simple kind of top down.
I played a bunch of the GTA 2, which was the last top down one.
Yeah.
Just seemed like good fun, good clean fun cartoon violence. But like, I think the big jump when you got to like GTA 3 and beyond was that it got like, it switched to like first person or third person and just got a lot more realistic, and like the violence became a lot less comical.
Yeah, like, and I completely understand that. And even, like, look at GTA 5. That, to me, dude, that's a freaking movie. Like, it's a movie that you happen to control the action in, okay? But whereas the rest of gaming is kind of, like, pushed forward, even if you go with the more derivative titles, like Legend of Grimrock, which I actually picked up again this weekend, it's still equip your dudes, make sure that you've got enough healing potions, and kill everything that comes near you. And, Jeff, what exactly about it do you think, like, makes that formula so perfect? Like, what as a gaming archetype has pushed that to remain the same despite this world of change going on around it?
I mean, the grinding for loot has kind of always been a thing. Like, original Diablo, and especially Diablo 2, really pushed, like, those rarity levels of loot and, like, getting, you know, like, the color schemes. Like, original Diablo basically just had, like, you know, common, like, sort of regular equipment and magic equipment. And then there was, like, the unique equipment.
Oh, and when you cracked that unique equipment, you felt like hot shit.
Yeah, like, you see that little gold, you know, name on the screen. It's like, unidentified sword or something. It's like, oh, shit, yeah. You know, you knew that was something sweet. So, like, originally Diablo only had those three. Like, Diablo 2 pushed it much further.
With gem and socketing and...
Yeah, Diablo 2 also had, yeah, introduced the crafting aspect, which that's definitely endured. Crafting, it's like a game without crafting now is, like, incomplete.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, I'm trying to think of, like, a modern title that doesn't have some kind of crafting.
Well, you know, and see, I think that's something we can arguably say Diablo also had an effect on, because, like, when I first booted up Skyrim, which is arguably a much more complex role-playing game, okay? I started out, and I decided I wanted to have somebody that was very stealthy, an archer, and decided to go into alchemy, because, hey, brew poisons, right? And I can't imagine the early grind of Skyrim without being able to make, like, frostbite venom, you know? Or stuff from Deathbells or stuff like that. And a lot of that, honestly, started in the 90s with dungeon crawling.
Yeah, I never did, like, the poison stuff in Skyrim. I always went straight to smithing because you could level it up pretty quickly, and it just, you very quickly got better equipment than you could purchase anywhere in the game.
Absolutely. And like, see, that even goes back to kind of what I was saying. Dungeon crawling, even if you've never picked up a title that is strictly dungeon crawling, its influences have changed the way that games are designed even now. Because Skyrim fits right into that example. If I played Skyrim for 10 minutes and I did nothing but craft better armor for my character, I still felt like I sat down and did something, you know?
I've probably logged in and spent hours without killing a single enemy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Have you ever tried a pacifist run of Skyrim? Have fun with that.
I have not done that.
The pacifist runs are the only thing you kill are the required quest enemies, and that's it. Because you have to do that, you know, to get your skills and shit like that. But, yeah, a pacifist run in Skyrim is bloody hard to do. So you basically craft the shit out of the best armor and protection in the game, and you do a lot of magic. But
I did a run for a little while where I was going unarmed with a Khajiit and getting the... There's, like, a heavy armor perk that improves your unarmed damage, and an enchantment you can get on, like, gauntlets and rings to improve unarmed. But that game has, like, no support for unarmed, like, natively otherwise.
Yeah.
Like, there's no, like, skill tree or anything for it. Like, I tried to find, like, perk trees for unarmed, and meh.
Yeah, if you don't go into the mod community with that, you definitely are going to run into some problems. And see, like, I think even arguably, if we're talking
The weapon trees are a little boring in that game, if I've got a complaint. Like,
oh, absolutely.
It's just like, yeah, I just max out the base weapon skill and not give a fuck about anything else.
And see, I think in a sense too, dungeon crawling definitely had an influence on the mod community, you know, because the idea of being able to craft better equipment. I mean, granted, these are two completely separate spheres, and I'm absolutely grasping at straws here, okay? But the concept of creating a fluid crafting system, creating a streamlined way to build the things you need to build whenever you need to build them. A lot of that wouldn't exist without the various crafting systems that first started in dungeon crawlers. And even like in games like Legend of Grimrock, which again, I recently picked back up after getting extremely frustrated with it the first time I installed it. That game is built around puzzle solving, killing things, getting better equipment, and crafting the shit out of every little root you find growing up in the rock, you know? Because otherwise, you're not going to survive. You are not going to make it down every single floor that you have to get through. You are going to die, and it's going to be a miserable experience. And even like crafting from a dungeon crawling perspective, it wasn't just something I think that rewards the player for just playing. I think it was something that, you know, when you get out so far, like in Diablo or Torchlight or something like that, being able to craft better equipment on the fly so you don't have to return to that central hub, that makes it a much more fluid playing experience as well, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's another thing Diablo really, I don't know if they were the first to do it, but like the town portal scroll, like, and that, the thing where like you're basically collecting as much loot as you can before returning to town to sell it all off and buy better stuff. Like that's become so ingrained in that genre.
Yeah, and I definitely got to give props to Torchlight there. Being able to haul all this shit on my little ferret and then send him to town so I don't have to. Thank you. Thank you so much, the people who made Torchlight. I greatly appreciate that. You have no idea. I didn't even give a shit that ferret ran every time there was an enemy on screen, so long as he could carry loot. Like, that's all the hell I wanted him for. I was the worst pet owner ever, but still. And also, like, despite people, it's such a simple formula, you did see a lot of stuff like that in dungeon crawlers at first. The concept of not having, you know, NPCs aid you, but buying people to help you, you know, like hired help and stuff like that. And I think a lot of the things we see in modern RPGs definitely you wouldn't have without dungeon crawlers first kind of pushing the genre in that direction. And from a gaming perspective, especially, what we ended up having was, and you know, people have tons of complaints about things like Diablo 3 and shit like that. Whatever. Okay. I definitely think dungeon crawlers are a bit of a acquired taste for some people, but there's a good chance if you're a regular gamer, you have played some kind of dungeon crawling game with some kind of dungeon crawling influenced element at some point. Where was I going with this? Oh yeah. Even, if you don't necessarily enjoy dungeon crawlers or what they have, their influence created an attitude in the gaming industry where you don't have to have infinitely complex, you don't have to have massively branching, you know, spell books for your mages or stuff like that. You can have a very simple, fluid experience for the player that rewards them just for sitting in front of the computer for half an hour. And I think in some respects, dungeon crawlers do not get the props they deserve today.
One thing that I think original Diablo had, is a little less true when you get to Diablo 2, but in Diablo, you really could just go through the levels and basically play through the whole game as you went. It didn't have the element, like the, what I consider kind of more of an MMO element, where you have to replay a level over and over to like sort of grind up to get good enough to progress. You just had to keep going forward, because in original Diablo, those levels didn't refill with enemies. Like, you just had to keep going through them.
Oh yeah. And see, that is the one complaint I have about kind of the modern approach. And this is, again, another thing where you have ancient games like EverQuest, World of Warcraft, things like that, influencing the industry in a way that may or may not be palatable to some people. I didn't particularly like when you had to start grinding for a particular item. You know what I mean? Like, replaying the area over and over, killing the same boss over and over and over again. Like, I really enjoyed the fact that when I was done, you know, and I had my loot, and anything I didn't need, I sold off for health potions. I was happy with that. And yeah, I definitely
You got through sort of four levels of, like, the one sort of basically tile set, and you'd go to the next one, and you'd be like, oh, man, this is, you know, this different scenery, sort of different level, you know, kind of level construction, different background music. The background music, I think, was really critical in Diablo.
Oh, absolutely. It had excellent
really
score, too,
great,
by the way.
Just creepy, atmospheric music going on in the background.
And it got worse as you went farther and farther down into the pit.
Yeah, it just got screwed up, yeah.
Yeah, and especially, like, I don't know if you actually remember the expansion The Hive.
Yeah, which was weird because it was a third party. That was done by Sierra.
Yeah, it was done by Sierra, and The Hive was, I think, there was Hellfire, and then there was The Hive. And was there a third expansion, or was it just those two?
It was just the one expansion, yeah.
Okay, yeah, Hellfire and The Hive. And The Hive had this very, like, organic, like, nasty score to it. Mm-hmm. And it was another one of those where it got worse and much more apparent as you went down. Yeah. And, but yeah, I definitely miss, like, you know, the continual push forward. You know, if you die, your stuff's gonna be there when you come back, that kind of thing. I mm-hmm. definitely miss that. And that's something that a lot of modern dungeon crawlers and a lot of modern RPGs or RPG lights or whatever you want to call them, have very liberally started using, is having to replay an area just to find the one creature, just for the slim margin of a chance that they might drop that piece of equipment. Yeah. I hate that. That's something,
And that's something that Diablo 2 really did pretty hardcore. I'm guessing some MMOs had kind of been doing that already, like the early ones like EverQuest and Ultima. But Diablo 2, sort of that grinding the end bosses, you know, for the fat loots became a real thing with Diablo 2.
Yeah, and the problem you ran into there was you might go through that run, or a one-man raid, as I like to call them, like 10 or 12 times before they finally drop the loot. And that was annoying as hell, you know? And that's something that's really like carried over
you'd get
a lot.
You'd always get stuff, but it's like, and it was never like, I don't think it was ever like a specific thing in Diablo 2. It was just like trying to get, you know, that, like, it was just, they were guaranteed to drop something of like a certain rarity value, and you just wanted to get like that, you know, super rare unique thing that was actually the type that you used.
Yeah, because God forbid you got another 10,000 gold, right? Like, that always seemed to be the case. Like, you'd reach the point in the runs where you finally were just like, oh, fuck, I'm filthy rich and I'm miserable. So really what we're trying to say, folks, is dungeon crawlers are an experience of what it's like to be the 1% in America. Repetitive, monotonous, horrible. The thing I guess we're trying to really drive home with this is, no matter how much you might malign something with a specific game or something like that, I think all games in their respective genres have overlap with other games. Just as like Diablo 2 and Torchlight and all these have influenced dozens of like spin-offs and things like that, they're in games you wouldn't even expect them to be, like the Witcher series, for example. The Witcher was a game series where if you wanted to craft and learn how to use better poison and stuff like that on Geralt's blade, you definitely could. If you wanted to go the avenue of developing better skills or getting really good with his frenzy maneuvers, you could do that. There was a lot more wide open aspects in The Witcher because it wasn't just the typical hack and slash. It was a dungeon crawler that borrowed liberally from its predecessors and made the most positive uses of them it could. Which, by the way, The Witcher 3 actually has a scene where you have sex on a unicorn. So that happens. Yeah, there you go.
Not another magic podcast approved.
Yeah, if there's one thing we stand for, it's sex with or on mythological creatures, yep, clearly. Yeah. Did we get another entry? You told me to check the cast email, but I didn't.
No, it wasn't another entry.
Okay, well, I am now going to do that because I'm a bad host. But, sex with unicorns. That's the theme of this episode. Jeff, do you have anything else you want to talk about with dungeon crawlers or RPGs or gaming in general?
Yeah, I mean, it's gotten to the point where these days, like, some games, especially, like, mobile games, like, if you want a platform that's going to boil down something into its essence, it's a mobile game. Because, like, you don't have room, you don't have time for exhaustive, you know, explorations of a genre. You get the basics. So, like, there's, like, a little, you know, phone game I've been playing that is essentially a crafting game.
Yeah.
Like, you collect stuff, and it's not even like, you don't really collect abstract things that you sell for money to buy other things. And you don't even really buy, like, stuff directly. It's all you get is crafting materials, and you use all those materials directly to craft the things that you're using. And it's all about sort of replaying, you know, different areas and stuff to farm those materials. So.
Oh, yeah. And see, like, that actually really aggravates me a ton with a lot more recent games, is they kind of have, like, taken the crafting aspect and they center the game around that. And, you know, play experience can be a crapshoot for people that don't make use of that. You know what I mean? I was trying to avoid talking about it as long as possible because I know how much it irritates you, but Hearthstone, I think, is a very good example. If you don't craft in that game, you're going to miss out. You can't just crack open things and expect it to work. It's going to backfire on you unless you start making use of the crafting system. Mm-hmm. And I think that's maybe something that got slightly misinterpreted when you're borrowing from predecessors like Diablo and things like that, is the things that necessarily made those titles successful are not things that always work. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And to see that we've actually had games evolve to just those borrowed aspects, that bugs me a little bit, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, but the other games I'd point to for, like, sort of this mid to late 90s dungeon crawlers were, like, the Baldur's Gate games.
Oh, so many hours in high school spent playing those. Oh, my Baldur's God. Gate,
and I ended up, I don't know why, I think it was just, like, timing. I played way more of the Icewind Dale games, which are technically that series, but they're a little different.
They're a bit more, like, combat-oriented, but those are definitely still within the same universe and everything like that. Yeah, Baldur's Gate specifically was one of those games, too, where it lacked the crafting system, but it really was the game more focused on combat and just interaction with NPCs. Mm-hmm. And the things it borrowed from dungeon crawlers where, you know, no matter how long you played, you always were grinding for better equipment. You always were hoping for the good drops from bosses or the red dragons or whatever you had to fight. And that was something I think that series did exceptionally well. One that might have surpassed it just a little bit, and I've talked about this game endlessly before, is Planescape Torment. Planescape was this weird collective storm of things that happened right with really bad timing for some reason. Planescape was the game had a really amazing, beautiful story that was too weird for most mainstream audiences, especially when it was competing directly with Diablo 2 at time of release. Very bad timing. But it was definitely a game where, there were minor things you could do and craft with your character that could gradually improve what they were doing. You had an ally specifically who, because of the race he was, he could, like, his weapon was made out of metal that he could shape with his mind, okay? And depending on what choices you made in conversations and stuff like that, it would influence his morality and change the blade. And just kind of, it was very, very cool. And he was kind of like the samurai-type character, and his voice actor was super gravelly. So he was above and beyond one of my favorite characters in that game. And there were other things you could do, too, like depending on what your actions were through the course of the game. The big thing for the main character was tattooing. You could get tattoos on your body that would influence how your character performed in combat and, like, in dialogue and stuff like that. And that was one of those minor things that got interpreted correctly that I think could have had a greater influence on the genre, because you don't see stuff like that in, you know, today's games. Like, it's all magical equipment, magical shit that breaks, and other things that don't really have too much of a bearing on the game outside of, you know, this is equipment that you're eventually going to replace.
One thing that I'm glad has sort of disappeared is, like, equipment taking damage.
Oh, that was so damn annoying. Oh, my God. I'm so glad that's not a thing anymore.
Kind of like I was talking with, like, Need for Speed having, like, your car taking damage. And the fact that, like, you could go broke just repairing your car. The games like that, you could, like, so your weapon or armor would get damaged in combat. You'd, like, have to stop and deal with that.
Yeah, like, the thing is, I enjoy hyper-realism. in reality on a daily basis. I sure as fuck don't want to encounter it when I'm gaming. You know, like, that is, like, one of the games that I really loved a lot, which was a dungeon crawler in its own right, I guess, is the, have you ever played Stalker Shadow of Chernobyl?
I have not.
Okay, Stalker was a game that had things like, you know, your character had to eat, you had to make sure you weren't too radioactive and things like that. Those were fine. Mm-hmm. What really kept the game alive was there was a very helpful, passionate community about that game. And they developed several mods where, you know, like, you weren't just going to get hungry, you were going to get thirsty. If you sprinted too fast, you had to wait till your heartbeat went down. And I loaded that shit once, and I was just like, no, no. No, I already know how fat and out of shape I am. I don't need a game to remind me how out of shape my character is, too. Or even more recently with Metro 2033, yeah. Or 2023 or whatever it was. Oh, like, I love that game a lot. It took all the things that were aggravating about Stalker and, again, provided a streamlined experience. But you're sitting there and you're really praying to God that your gun doesn't break on you, you know? And when you're way down in the ditch, so to speak, and you're surrounded on all sides, the last thing you really want is an equipment failure. Mm-hmm. Which, with foresight and planning, you could usually avoid those things in games. But it was an extra element you had to spend time preparing for that actually took you away from playing the game itself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Another thing that I think defines some dungeon crawlers is unlimited ammunition.
Oh, yeah.
Like Diablo,
Gauntlet especially.
Fucking arrows in Diablo, like, didn't fucking matter. Like, I guess Diablo 2 had arrows.
The Amazon class had arrows.
But you had an ability that just didn't use arrows.
Like, and you also had abilities for the Amazon class where, you know, like one arrow would shoot three arrows and shit like that, so you didn't care.
But no, like one of their very low level skills was just like fires an arrow that doesn't consume ammunition. Yeah, ammunition existed in Diablo 2, but was kind of trivial.
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, that was something that dungeon crawlers, I think, always tried really hard to institute, but it didn't work out, like in Fallout, okay? And Fallout was a fairly complex role-playing game, but you got to a point where you were such a good shot, and you had such good weaponry that you could, like, shoot them in the eyes and spend one bullet and blow half their body away. So you didn't care how much ammo you had, you know, until you were absolutely out. it's funny how repetitively every RPG that's ever came out has tried to institute some kind of ammo policy, and it's fallen flat on its face. Like, even the games that tried hardcore survival, like Stalker and Metro 2033, it was a feature you just never really cared about, because, like, if you ran out of ammo, there's a gun laying right there with a full clip. You know, you just go and pick it up and start shooting.
Yeah, I feel like some shooters, like, the difficulty affected how, like, health crates and ammo crates would spawn. So there are some games where if you turn up the difficulty, there just weren't health crates. Like, there just weren't any.
Or like in Nightmare Mode on Diablo, where if you died, you died for real.
Oh yeah, yeah. No respawn in town, you did.
That actually reminds me of this webcomic I read
one
time. That's
led to a whole fucking genre of games now that are just like, fuck, no save points. Yeah, it's not even an option. That's just what the game is see how far you can get before you die.
To kind of elaborate on that as well, Dark Souls is definitely one where... you know, you might retain your equipment and stuff when you, like,
check.
Respawn.
Yep.
Burp, 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 burp. Am I there?
Yeah.
Okay, am I alright?
You're still a little robot-y.
It'll be okay. We'll deal with it. Okay. It's probably somebody in the house on their Kindle. Okay. Yeah, like, in Dark Souls and, its respective, legacy titles, like Bloodborne and things like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, you're gonna die and you're gonna respawn, but your body's all the way in a ditch, so any progress you had is permanently lost if you can't get that body back, you know? Yeah. And, I think, like, the roguelikes like that are a lot of fun, but there's something missed in interpretation. Like, the one that specifically jumps to mind is I Wanna Be the Guy, which I think a lot of our listeners might have heard of. It's a fairly niche indie title. Think of Super Meat Boy, but with light RPG elements, and everything is ridiculously, like, teeth-gnashing, throwing controllers through a window at a baby that's on fire hard. Did you like that analogy?
Yeah, it's good visual. It's good visual.
Yeah, like, and while those titles are fun, I think they speak to a very specific kind of player. Usually the people who are really fun to watch get angry on stream. But, yeah.
I personally don't play those games. I like being able to play something and put it down and come back to it and just have it be there and, like, have saves and stuff like that.
Yeah, and see, like, those kinds of titles, too, it kind of ruins the whole point of, like, dungeon crawling and stuff like that. I mean, there's definitely a certain amount of pride to be gleaned from them, but what you run into is, if I play for 30 minutes, there's no save points and my character dies, I'm like, fuck this, and I go boot up Baldur's Gate, you know?
Yeah.
And I'd never think twice about it ever again. Okay, the only thing I really have to say, I do have something I want to bug you on real quick, but with the season closing out, I'm rank 18 on Hearthstone, which is not great, but I'm happy about it. The only reason I even bring up Hearthstone is I bought Black Rock Mountain. Accidentally, I was going to get Naxx, but I ended up getting Black Rock Mountain instead because I was tweeting when I was making the purchase. And I would like to say I've really enjoyed my time with the expansion. I didn't know how Hearthstone was going to handle their solo adventures based on the experiences I had playing against the Innkeeper and through the tutorial. But I've really, really enjoyed playing Black Rock Mountain a lot more than I thought I have. The class challenges are way too fucking easy, but it's still been a very fun, rewarding experience. And, like, if I lose, I go and craft another deck because I want to beat the next boss that much. So big props to, you know, Blizzard Entertainment and all the Hearthstone players out there. I've built a new Frostmage build with Flamewaker and a couple of legends that I've managed to get a hold of, like Chromagus. Chromagus is insane. He puts double copies of everything you draw into your hand. Like, if you can think of Consecrated Sphinx on crack, that's this card. So I'm super happy about the list, and I am ready for the next rank season to start. So if you guys want to talk Hearthstone or any kind of garbage, be sure to add me. I'm Jack LaCroix, hashtag 1947 on Hearthstone. I'd love to play against you. So with that said, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to give my contact information, and we'll close out on this very brief, fun episode we've had. Like I said, if you want to play Hearthstone with me, Jack LaCroix, hashtag 1947 on Battle.net. Twitter is at Jack LaCroix. You can read my thoughts on Hearthstone, horror fiction, some of my actual horror fiction, or ask me anything at jackfromnc.tumblr.com. You can always listen to this podcast, see all the brilliant work of Trevor and Renee, Heavy Meta Midget, Zeki, all the fun people that we all love to talk about over at, oh god, I'm dying. Okay, mtgprodeals.com, which has had the finest in content creation since the Revolutionary War. And Jeff, with that said, I guess it's your turn.
Yeah, I'm Jeff Good. I'm at Low Guppy. The cast is at Not Another MTG. Or you can email us at notanothermagicpodcast@gmail.com. I know it's a mouthful, but it's the name of the fucking podcast, so type.
Take the whole mouthful. Yeah, do it slowly. Say it slowly. Type it slowly.
Yeah, it's a dragon dick of an email address.
Oh, God. All right. Even if you don't take us, that name demands respect. That's what Jeff's trying to say. So, folks, without further delay, we're going to go ahead and end this. It's been great talking to you again this week, Jeff.
Yeah.
Folks, tune in next week when we are going to read Jeff's erotic horror fiction live on the air. Good night, everybody.